Okay, so the rest of the instructions are up there on the screen, and they're in your note, in your handouts. So because this is running in VMware, we've given you full access to everything. So the root account password is the same. It's LCFGFC6. The LCFGFC6 user that you're running as, if you run sudo, you get access to everything as well via that. So. We are obviously using the most cutting-edge graphical technology inside the VMware image, you notice. we have DVDs, which you get to take away with you, which has this VMware image on as well, and some other resources. That's genuine resources, not LCFG resources, RPMs and so on. Okay. Yes. You may do. They're all branded as part of an organization that doesn't exist anymore, like my t-shirt. We got reorganized out of existence. Okay, is everybody in that this directory now with the command line? In that directory there. This laser just... And can you confirm that there's only one file in there called localhost?
There are two files in there. The inventory's in there as well. The inventory profile.
Oh, there's another profile. Okay. So there should be two files in there, I'm told now. Okay.
Yeah.
Hands up anyone who hasn't seen this file that it exists, called localhost. Right. That's your profile source, or source profile, or source, or profile, or... Nomenclature is great in LCFG, because almost everything means almost everything. So let's have a look at that file. I hope it matches what's in your notes. We're on slide 23 in your notes, by the way. It doesn't show on the screen, but it does in your notes. So the first and most important thing to notice about this file, it's a plain text file. You can use your own editor of choice, and we can have flame wars at lunchtime about what that might be. It includes comments. Just plain C comments. I don't believe it uses C++ comments. They just go straight through, as they don't get stripped out by the preprocessor. And this particular source profile doesn't set any resources. It just goes and includes some other files that do the heavy lifting for us. You will see what it does is it says include some file called localsite.h, and that just basically defines, well, I don't know what it does. We don't need to know. It's a black box, isn't it? It's just supposed to be simple. You can guess what it does, but it probably defines things like what your network number might be, or the name of the institution, that kind of thing. Then it goes on and says the operating system is called minimal, and that means that we're running in this kind of lightweight mode. Okay, we're not the full top-down heavyweight LCFG thing in this example. We're only setting a few resources, and we're running on the hardware called VMware Workstation 5, which obviously we are. And the last line there is we're including some option that says please be an LCFG server. So all your machines, you've got one virtual machine each. It is running a client, obviously, but it's also running a server. And we thought for a while that maybe we'd give you two virtual machines and try and network them together so you could really see the separation between the server and the client. It's just easier to run the server and the client on the same box. And in fact, that's how we do things. We build our LCFG servers using LCFG. It's a bit like self-hosting compilers. And we don't need to look inside any of these files during the workshop. In fact, it's a bit of a challenge for you if you find them. So if we're going too slow, or you don't like lunch and you'd rather come and work at a computer screen, then you can do that kind of thing. Now, because this is hands-on, you want to be typing more than LS and more. So we've been tasked with something from our management, and our color drained out of our faces, and we've been told, this organization really needs a custom message of the day to really make all our users feel valued and wanted and part of the organization. And as Unix geeks, you all know there's a file called etc.motd that has this text in it. So that's all we're going to do initially. We're going to manage that file. Does that file exist already? What does it contain? Anybody? Nothing. It's an empty file, but it does exist already. So what we're going to do instruction up there. All the example files for this part of the workshop are in that same directory. Now we're running as root because obviously normally you don't give your users full write access to your configuration of your entire site. So we have to run as root in here. And because the client's name is localhost, that's why the file we're editing effectively is localhost. But rather than getting you to edit these files, we're just getting you to copy them over the top, one after the other. Now, hands up anybody who's already seen the change in message of the day file. Excellent, that means it works. It's always a good sign. Has anybody now not seen the change in the file yet? Could somebody put their hand up if they haven't seen the change yet so that the helpers can assist? All right, you've all? Okay, well, let's... let's have a look at the source file then. This file that you've replaced, localhost. Have a look at it again. You can use more or less, or cat. Okay. Who wants to prove to me that the message of the day file changed? What does it say now? Anybody remember? Workshop, yes. Exactly. Right, okay. Phew. Either that or you're just reading the same notes that you got printed out. Yes, the notes should reflect exactly what happens on the workstations. If we have a look, there are four relevant lines added to the localhost file towards the bottom. You'll notice I didn't put in the notes all the comments. So the comments are quite good because it means that this is a thing I really like about LCFG compared to something like Active Directory. Okay? In Active Directory, you can't put in any comments anywhere to say what it is you're trying to do with this bit of functionality. In LCFG, you can put all these comments in. In fact, your comments should probably outweigh, like normal source code, your comments should outweigh your actual code. So what we do is we tell the file component that we're going to mutate its files resource. Now I tried to use the word example rather than the word file. I was tempted at first to write the first thing saying exclamation mark file dot files mad file. Right? And then I thought, no, wait a minute, that's going to confuse everybody. So this word example is a tag, and it means many components have, some of their resources are able to have multiple values depending on, it's like an array as a data construct. So we say, here's a list of files, and the tag is like the index into the array. So the next line is file dot file underscore example being the tag. So we're going to tell it that the file that we're managing in, for this tag is etc. motd. And then the file component wants to know more than that. There's no point telling it, here's a file that we're going to manage, and then be silent. So we have to tell it how we're going to manage it. And we're telling it that this is, we're going to give it the literal contents of the file. That's what we're going to do with that. So its type is literal. It's a normal file, and here's, we're going to give you the contents. And the fourth line on that is simply the contents. And the name of the resource for that is TMPL, which is short for template. Because as we see, we can do more than just have static text in there. So that's the text. Welcome to the LCFG tutorial, not workshop. I was wrong. Is everyone happy with that, that all happened on their machines? Great. So you've made your first change. How on earth did that happen? Right, so now we're going to go and look in... Oh, it did wonderful line splitting. That's slash var slash lcfg slash log. That path will become imprinted in your fingertips. It is where you always go to look on the server and the client for working out what's happening. Every component by default, the framework that LCFG supplies to all the components that you write or other people write will default to logging in that directory in a file with the name of the component. So it's a very useful place to go to. And if you look at the file called server, that's the server component, which is the compiler. The server component runs the compiler on your behalf. Has everybody seen the entry that says it noticed localhost changed and it processed it?
Go right down to the end of the file.
Oh, you have to go to the end of the file. Yep. You can just type cat for the file, or rather than paging it, because it's only the last two lines I think we're interested in. Okay? And presumably everybody's got the words and brackets XML published at the end of their log file. If there had been an error, then you don't get XML published written there. I can't remember exactly what you get. I think it's XML not published or something. Can you remember, Paul? Yeah. Or gave up, or time for a coffee. Okay, now all the compiler did was generate that XML file and place it somewhere, write it out to some location. The server component itself doesn't do anything fancy with the web in terms of serving the profiles. Apache is running on all your machines as well and is pre-configured to simply serve out these directories in its document root somewhere. So now if you look at the client file, now of course normally the server file would only exist on your server machine, but the client file exists on all your machines. So again, it's probably only the last few half dozen lines or so that you're interested in this. And it's probably got a timestamp. Well, it will have a timestamp, but I don't know what it will be. It will be a few minutes ago. assuming the time stuff is all working in these virtual machines. All right, okay. So the line to start looking at is where it says new profile. The last line that says new profile. And then it gives the URL to where that profile came from. Now, there's nothing to stop you running multiple LCFG servers across your organization for resilience or load balancing or whatever reason you want. So the client tells you which server it got the profile from. And it also tells you when it was last modified. That's quite convenient as well, because if it's telling you that it was last modified 3 weeks ago and you've just edited a change, you know that probably what happened was the compiler failed to compile it. There were errors, so it didn't publish the XML, so therefore the client hasn't picked up the new one. Then it tells you that it's accepted the profile, and don't type in the number I've put in the slide and the notes. That's just some kind of checksum on the profile, so that if it receives a notification from another server in your organization that's got the same profile, because they're all looking at the same source files and compiling at different speeds, because one's your very fast development server and one's your really slow production server, the client says, oh, I've already seen this profile, though, so I don't need to worry about it. And then it's compared the profiles, and it's noticed the only change is for resources for the file component. So it's gone off and trying to run the file.configure method. So again, the file component's configure method. So if we have a look in the file, in that same log directory, the last couple of lines in that should be, it's been told to configure, and it configured your file. So that's once round the loop. Any questions at all on that? So that just illustrates the architecture slide that we showed earlier today. Sorry, could you repeat? Yes, the question was that profile for the whole client? Yes, there's one file that has the resources for all the components that client is interested in, if you like. We're going to build on that during the day, yes. That's right. So we think the job's finished, but then it turns out we notice potentially a technical glitch. If you look at the long listing of the message of the day file, suddenly it's group LCFG. And that's simply because that's where the LCFG component was running with this group ID set. And we didn't tell it what group ID should be on the file, so it defaulted to whatever it was running as. So, if you copy the next file in, example 2, the whole process will run again, and it's wonderfully asynchronous, which really translates to not quite as quick as you wanted it to be. It's really quick. You can say things like, "Yeah, I mean, it'll happen as soon as it can," but that's really fast. But when you made a little change and it takes 3.5 seconds rather than 2 seconds. Can be frustrating. So you can do lots of ls minus l's return, up arrow return, up arrow return, until you see it changing. And then after a certain amount of time, you decide, well, maybe it didn't actually compile. Maybe I better go back and look. So you get into this sequence. Feel free to check the log files again. People only ever look at log files when things go wrong, of course. So. If you look at the message of the day file, the long listing of it again, it should have gone back to root, owned by root. Group root.
Can
That's probably an undocumented feature. The question was, if you look at the file log, it doesn't log that it changed message of the day. And that's because the component has seen that the contents of the file didn't change. It was only the modifiers on the file changed, and it doesn't bother logging that as a change. Which is a kind of buglet, probably.
It comes from a sub-program that does the template processing, right, where it's the file program, the file component does the template processing plus the attribute.
Yes. Because many components, not all components, but many components come with helper applications. The component code itself that handles the interaction with the framework, so defining the methods and logging and things like that, tends to be very simple shell or Perl script. And if you've got a really complicated task to do with these resources that you end up with, it's maybe better to write some external helper that it simply calls from some methods. Okay, and we added 3 extra resources to this example file. We told the file component that we really want the owner and the group both to be root, and we're also telling it that the mode of the file is 0644. It's really important that you do precede your modes with zeros. Don't just write 644, it won't work. It'll do something completely unexpected. You'll end up with really strange ls-l output. But that's in the manual page. But not in your heads, unfortunately. Well, it is now. So is everybody happy that tidied up things up a little bit more? So we can do more than just maintain the contents of files. We can change the ownership of files. So you might have had a file that exists on the system out of the box, but has got the wrong ownership. So you could tell it, I just want this different ownership. Now your manager thinks this is great, and because you did it in no time at all, he's immediately thinking of other things to do. And he's had a complaint that says, I don't know which machine I'm logging into when I SSH to something. I can't remember what I typed 3 seconds ago. So we need to customize it somehow. So the first thing to do is simply to copy across that example 3 file into your localhost file. And again, the compiler's going to notice this because it's got a polling loop in it as well. And it says every few seconds or whatever, there's a changed file. I better recompile it. Okay. Can everybody see that the message of the day file contents has changed? Anybody had a look to see what it says? What's the difference? Anybody? It's got localhost written in it as well. Yeah. You can't? It just takes time, yes. This... If it doesn't show up the first time you do it, it's because this kind of difference between immediate and 2 seconds has caught you out. Just keep doing it again and looking again and again, and it'll show up until you get bored and go and look at the logs. Use watch. Or use watch, which doesn't come on Apple Macs by default.
Hail minus F.
That notices file changes, tail minus F. Okay, so let's look at the localhost file. And see what we've changed. It's only the TMPL, Timple, resource that changed. And it's added a reference to another resource. And it's not just another resource of the file component, it's another component's resource, a component called the profile component. And the profile component's one of these components that doesn't really have any code, it's only got resources. So this is another aspect of the LCFG syntax. It's simply open angle bracket percentage sign, then the name of the resource, then you close it again. And you can reference any resource in any setting, effectively. And again, it points you to page 47 of the guide for a discussion on how to do this referencing stuff. Now, the file component is called the file component, but it can do much more than manage just files. Remember, everything on a Unix box is a file. Everything in Unix is a file. It can manage directories and symbolic links, as well as files. Can it manage special files as well, Paul?
That's a good question. I
don't think it can.
I don't think so, no.
No, that might be a feature to add. A feature request. Yeah, manage device inodes and pipes, named pipes and things. Yeah. Anyway. Right, so example 4, we're going to copy across to your localhost file again. Oh yes, slide. I'll hold this in my hand. So we should be able to predict now, hopefully from the source profile, what it's going to do. I've changed the tags, so rather than having a tag example, we've now got two tags, one example 1 and one example 2. And the first file that we're managing in this is actually, its type is dir directory. And again, for completeness, we're telling it its owner and its group are both root, and we're setting its mode. So we're not just relying upon some unknown thing that depends on how the file component is running to end up with things like umasks and things like that. We don't want to worry about these. We just explicitly tell it that its mode is going to be this. And then the next file we add is the example 2 one. And again, we mutate the files plural resource to add it as a tag. And then we define the things we need for that, which are the path to it. That's the file resource. And rather than just typing in etc. message of the day, again, we simply reference that, the resource that we've defined already. So it means if we're trying to set up a series of symbolic links to other files that we're managing, it makes a lot more sense to only have the name of that file in once. It's like whenever you're writing scripts, you stick a variable at the top. If it's going to appear, if this constant's going to appear lots of times, you define it once and it gets referenced. And the type of this file is a link, which is a symbolic link. I don't believe the file component handles hard links.
So.
No. Yeah. And this time, for the contents of this file, because it's a symbolic link, the contents of a symbolic link are simply the target that it points to. Can anybody confirm that that symbolic link exists and does point back to the file? Yeah. Can anybody tell me the contents of that symbolic link then? What's the text if you just catch that file, that symbolic link? Anybody? Yes, all right. Can you tell me in the source profile, in the localhost file, where it sets that. This is the trick question. It doesn't. Why is it there? It was there already. The file component is effectively a one-way thing. You change a file on the system. If that file becomes unmanaged in the future, it doesn't disappear or go back to what it used to be. And a phrase from the Windows world that we use is tattooing. That's simply tattooing something onto your system, and if it drops out of management, it stays there. You have to actively do something to get rid of it. And the file component, you can put in your source profile instructions to the file component to say the type of this file is delete, and it will get rid of it. But that's beginning to use your configuration system as something to perform one-off actions on your system. That's not very elegant. So that's one problem with the file component. Don't think that I can manage everything on my system because we've got the file component. That's great. Okay. And it also means that that file used to be managed, but the compiler, the server, where you might want to do your analysis of what your entire setup is, doesn't know anything about this anymore. But when you look on the clients, you still think, oh, that's a managed file, though, because it says it's managed by LCFG or whatever. So we saw earlier, with that message of the day file, we put a kind of, it was a bit like a template, because we put some text in and then referenced another resource. And that worked on the server. At compile time, it referenced the other resource and stuck that in. Now, if our message of the day file wasn't one line, but was actually a huge, big, long, complicated string of messages that would vary quite a lot between hosts, depending on various things that various team leaders or whatever had decided, then it might quite quickly get to a point where we're just putting so much text into our profile that it's very unwieldy, and also, if it's a really large file, inefficient, because it's embedded inside this XML that's going backwards and forwards across your network, and also being processed every time the profile compiles. Even if that didn't change, if some other resource changes for your profile, the whole thing gets recompiled, so it's processed. So it can be inefficient quite quickly. So what the file component can also do is it can reference or use an external template that you supply to the clients by whichever method you choose. Now, in a kind of prescriptive environment where LCFG is managing absolutely everything, this is probably going to be supplied by a package which the LCFG framework has stuck on the system for you. If you're running a lightweight mode, then it's however you normally put files on machines, whether it's your own package management system or whatever, or rsync or whatever. So what we're going to do is we're going to attempt to configure the SSHD on your workstations. Because, again, we all know it's just a file that you need to change. And the file component's great for doing files. So let's do that. Let's copy this template out of the same place as where all your other examples were into root's home directory. Now, it's important to get this path correct. It's just root's home directory. Now, please put your hand up if you haven't used diff before. Right, okay. What you're wanting to do is, in the notes, this is page 30 on your notes, it tells you the exact command to type in for diff to find what the differences are between the vanilla upstream SHD config file and this template we're going to use. I prefer using the minus U option to diff because it just makes it easier to understand the output for a human being. Or for me, anyway.
What is the template for SHD?
The original one. You're at the point where you're trying to copy it. All right, it's in the same place as all the example files are. Yeah, just to reiterate, the template file, when you're copying it into the roots home directory, it's in the same place as all the other example 1, example 2, and so on files were. Now, I left this copying in because this enforces to you the concept that LCFG hasn't copied this file. You've had to do it yourself, or you would have to ask your management system, or if you were using LCFG to do this kind of thing, ask LCFG separately to copy this file in somehow. Okay? It's not something the file component is doing off its own bat. Is everybody stuck looking at the differences? Put your hands up so that the helpers can help. Okay, got one there. Now the helpers haven't seen this before either, so if they're not very good, it's because they haven't seen it before, not because they're not experts. This is quite interesting as well. It's like using a managed environment, this, because one of the things we all do is when there's a problem, we immediately say, wait a minute, all our other machines are just fine. It's just this machine that's the problem. So either is a problem with the hardware or the user, or something really weird's gone wrong in this machine. So, and in this environment, because we're all doing the same instructions, we're all running the same VM image, if it doesn't work, if it works on one machine, it's going to work everywhere. That's like another aspect of managed environments are great. So anyway, you're all sitting there with diff output and wondering what on earth's going on. You'll notice that I put in a comment at the top of the SSHD file to say, this file is now managed by LCFG, hands off. Right? It's not a good idea to go editing files that you see that written in them, because all that'll happen is at the next reboot or some arbitrary time, your changes will disappear. And then you'll scratch your head and say, but I did it honest. Then there are 4 lines of this kind of macro code, which again is documented on page 84 onwards of the guide. And we're actually showing that it's a bit more powerful than the just simply referencing variables that we did in the source profile. We're actually saying, if this resource is set, then we're going to put this in the file. Otherwise, we're not putting anything in the file at all. Okay? And the stuff that it's putting in is a comment to say, I'm configuring the listening port, and then we're setting the directive in the file to say the port is whatever the value of the resource is. So we're all happy we got that template file?
Are we expecting to see quite a big, quite a lot of differences?
No, about 5 lines.
We'll get a lot more than that. If I do it between that and that, yeah?
Uh-huh.
You get that many.
All right, it's only at the top then. Oh, hang on, you've copied the example file across.
Was it supposed to be after?
No, this is, we're still here. No, we're still here. Only the template's been copied, not the example file. Because you've got port 222. Oh no, where was it? Well, if it's just...
Bridge.
Bridge, all right, yeah. Okay.
Kenny, I think there's an artifact from when I was testing the examples.
Ah, right. Okay, the difference output is... probably different from what we thought.
Yeah,
and that's in etc. SSHD. Okay.
Sorry about that. It looks like I haven't. I thought I put everything.
Okay, that's fine.
I was going through all the examples before, so that's what it is.
Okay, I'll just note down that so that we can fix that. That's the benefit of coming on the first course. You can hear people blaming each other for everything.
It's also
Is it running on port 222 at the moment then? Right. Why don't we go into the bit I didn't want to do? Why don't you all edit the SSHD config file in etc. The current in-service unmanaged file. Okay? So this is the bad old days. Fortunately, we've got massive parallelization of computing officers here, and we can change all the machines at one once. Who needs LCFG? Just hire another 1,000 computing officers. So the line that says port 222. Oh, actually, just copy the ridge file back.
Yeah, you should copy the ridge.
All right.
Where we started
from. Right. Okay. If you find the file etc. /ssh/ sshd config.orig. Yeah? Yeah. And just copy that to etc. /sshd config. Okay? Yep, and then you have to restart SSH as well. Which... Put your hand up when you're ready to get instructions for restarting SSH. Okay, thank you. You restart SSH by running /etc/init.d/ssh space reload or restart. Or
it's okay, I existed at a different way.
Okay.
If you want to use it, you can switch to that.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. Yes, that's what I said. You could do that. You were obviously concentrating hard on editing it, choosing which editor to use. Okay, are we all happy? Hands up if we don't think we've got SSHD running now on port 22, completely vanilla. Okay, there's one over here. A quick little check on this is just to type SSH localhost and see if you get prompted for a password. Okay, you're still running on port 222 then. You've gone ahead and copied the files in there. No. This copy is that orig. Oh no, hang on. Yes, sshd config orig to sshd config. Yes, and then have a look for the file. It's the default, so it will be 22. So now just restart SSH. Yeah. Okay. Right, hands up anyone now who still hasn't managed to get an SSHD response by just typing SSH localhost. Okay, so we're happy now. We're back to just a vanilla SSHD installation. Great, we're back on track. Phew. Now, this is the bit that confused me. I thought you'd already gone and done this, got ahead of me. Copy now example 5 in. Because all we've done up to now is put a template on our clients manually And now we're going to try and manage that file. And while we're waiting for the compiler to notice it and the client to get its notification and then the file component to do its work for us, we'll have a look at the source profile. So look at that localhost file that you've got now. And we'll see again, there's no mention of message of the day files in here anymore. We're only managing in this profile that SSHD config file. So again, we've told the file component that the file we're managing is /SSHD config. And we've also told it that actually its type is a template. It's not literal anymore. It's a template. And we've told it in the template resource, the tuple resource, the path to the template. That's why it's got /root/SSHDconfig.tmpl in it. That's the file we just copied across. And of course, as Unix admins, we all know that SSH is a bit picky about permissions on files, so we remember we have to set them appropriately. And we're also going to tell the file component that here's your variable, it's called port, because that's what we had in our template. Now, anybody want to have a check? You can go and check your SSHD _config file, the in-service one, and it really should have the small file with just a comment at the top. That's the only real change. Let's see. SSHD config. Oh, yeah. Okay, I think it's fine because it says at the top, managed by the LCFG file component, which is what was in the template. So remember, the template always added the comment in and then would add in the port value if we'd set the port value. And you've already just checked that you can SSH in. When you SSH'd in, did you get the message of the day message? Yeah, excellent. Right, but we didn't tell it that we're going to change the port. So now we've got this file under management, we can start changing some resources, some values inside the file. So if you copy across example 6, the only difference in that example is that it actually sets a value for this variable. Port. So you can have a look at your SSHD config file and see if it's actually got a directive saying port 222 in it. And it does. Great. So this time we've managed to do the work of 1,000 computing officers by editing one file. Okay. Now the second last thing on this slide here says try SSHing in with -P222 to your local machine. Why doesn't it work? Anybody? We've kind of given it away already today. But anybody got an idea why it doesn't work? You haven't restarted the server, that's right. How do we restart the server? I've changed this on all the machines, all 8,000 machines in my organization. I've changed the port SSH is listening to because I hate people from the Philippines or whatever trying to hack. Okay? How do I restart the server on these 8,000 machines? hire 1,000 computing officers and give them 8 machines each, yeah. Okay, yeah, the file component didn't do that for us. Because the file component just manages the contents of files, really. That's what it does. What's that, sorry? Another component. Yes, there are other components. When we had the prescriptive top-down approach to your entire organization, everything being run using LCFG on the machine, then we had, remember, it said something like 50 components running. It wasn't the client component and the file component. It was these plus another 48 odd components. So they do things like that. And the next slide just explains that you go and do a reload, restart the SSH server, and then it would work. And again, remember, you still get that message of the day, even though we're not managing that file anymore. So the story is really the file component is great for what it does. It can get you out of holes, but don't rely upon it to manage your entire system. There are other components out there.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, questions. I've got time for questions. We're 5 minutes ahead.
Your local host file with, you know, example, says you might want to use a package or something that comes from FileRack. Obviously, I can push the template using a file, but and presumably the MS. Is that what controls the dependency over there? So the first question is, there is a dependency there. I need a template on the machine before I can run the second file operation. And is that just an MAP, or is that the order of the file?
Okay, the question was, we suggested that you use some package mechanism to deploy the template so that it's ready there for when the file component notices the change on the clients. Why can't we use the file component to deploy the template? And there is obviously a dependency there, so is it the order that you do these M adds, example 1, example 2, example 3, and so on? Does that reflect in the order of operations on the client so that you can guarantee the template's there before you try and use the template? That was the question. The answer is... I'm not exactly sure, but I would imagine the file component probably simply sorts on the tag, probably. Or does the compiler sort? The compiler sorts by tag when it puts it in the XML profile, I think. So there isn't a defined order. I think that's the short answer. There's no defined order. So. Yes. That's a kind of gotcha in LCFG. You think it can do everything, and then you realize that there are these issues in the orderings. When you have to be aware of what's actually happening under the hood when you make a change. So if you're making a change in two components, if you're running heavyweight LCFG, you will be able to know which order the components, in which order the components configure methods run when the profile changes. Okay, so you can configure that yourself. So if there's a particular order you want them to go in, do that. The other way of doing it is simply to make the change that is required first. Yeah, do it in two steps. That's right. And that's what we find as well if you're including, say you're adding another header file to your system, and then you're trying to include that header file, you have to make that header file, add the header file to the system first, so that then the compiler can actually successfully include it, because it does maintain dependencies of all the header files. So if you change a header file, it will go and recompile all the clients that included it. But if the previous compilation was failed because it couldn't find this header file, when you actually then put the header file in, it doesn't have that dependency information. So this is experience you gain. You do have to do things in multiple steps if there are these kind of timing dependencies.
There's also, I mean, there's a fundamental issue there that isn't addressed well of the getting a synchronization between the packages that are installed on your machine and the configuration information. So there is, as you'll see, I think, later on, you know, there's an LCFG component that will manage which packages are on your machine. But sometimes you make a configuration change that depends on having a particular version of the package actually installed on the machine. And you have to be kind of rather careful that you've got the packages there that the configuration system expects to find. And that coupling is not kind of quite as good as it should be, you know, the thing that manages the packages from the thing that manages the configuration.
Any other questions at all? Okay. Thank you very much.